This summer, Hollywood is offering us close-ups of a variety of American workplaces, ranging from the silly to the sadistic. WNYC's Sarah Fishko shares her take on the daily grind on the silver screen.
They say that life is divided into three more or less equal parts: the hours you sleep, the hours you work, and the hours you spend in other pursuits. Recreation, I guess you'd call it. How you apportion that time, assuming you have the luxury of making decisions about it at all, where you put the work part of it, that's the stuff of conflict. Most movies are about the recreation part of life.
Your father and I were just discussing his day at work. Why don't you tell our daughter about it, honey?
Janie, today I quit my job.
The movie starts when the protagonist leaves work, because for many people, that's where life begins.
And I marvel that you can be so contemptuous of me on the same day that you lose your job.
Listen, I didn't lose it. It's not like, whoops, where'd my job go? I quit. Someone passed the asparagus.
Nobody ever really does much working on screen. Lately, though, work itself seems to be rising to the surface of pop culture again. A movie like Clerks 2 shows us work in scenes from the lives of the monumentally unambitious.
32 and you're flipping burgers? Is anyone else from our graduating class back there?
And The Devil Wears Prada shows us the behavior at work of the phenomenally, insanely driven.
I don't see my breakfast here. Are my eggs here? Where are my eggs?
Where's that piece of paper I had in my hand yesterday morning?
As entry-level types try to figure out what price they have to pay to break into that working world.
My personal life is hanging by a thread, that's all.
Well, join the club. That's what happens when you start doing well at work, darling. Let me know when your whole life goes up in smoke. That means it's time for a promotion.
Work used to be, you know, Dad coming home at 5 o'clock on Father Knows Best and eating dinner. And it has not been that way for a very, very long time.
Lisa Belkin writes a New York Times column on life and work.
Now we've become obsessed. All these things we invented. I've got the BlackBerry, and I've got the laptop, and I have the cell phone, and I'm very proud of myself that I can go and work in a hammock on the beach, but I'm working in a hammock on the beach.
It's well known that work has changed for some of us. The 40-hour week is history, they say, and it's more common to work 60 or even 80 hours a week from wherever you happen to be. What's interesting is that with all that, popular movies reveal the same concerns now as they did practically at the dawn of talkies and before: the repetition of work and the amount of work that we actually have to do. In the mid-30s, Charlie Chaplin pretty much said it all in Modern Times with The Tramp, whose wrenches keep moving in his hands as he twitches, even after he gets off the job.
That, perhaps, is the universal claim of descent from the workplace, the repetitive, robotic activities of work, which again could be from a brain surgeon to working on the assembly line.
Al Jeaney is a professor of business ethics and author of My Job, Myself.
In fact, I often think of work as erasure, like the nickel erasers that we could buy at the dime store, the 5 and 10, that it would just wear us down.
Just a couple of years after Modern Times in 1938, an old 20s play called Holiday was made into a movie, and that's almost like an answer to Chaplin. Cary Grant, crazy in love, he thinks, with a rich social-climbing woman, but not quite ready to pay the price for joining her and her father in their quest for what they consider the good things in life.
I don't want too much money.
Too much money?
Well, more than I need to live by. You see, it's always been my idea to make a few thousands early in the game and then quit for as long as they last and try to find out who I am and what goes on and what about it. Now, when I'm young and feel good all the time.
After World War II, of course, the daily grind was just something you wanted to get back to.
John Stack, easy on the butter. Adam and Eve on a raft.
Mildred Pierce in her restaurant, paying the bills, grateful for the work.
We've been jammed ever since the doors opened.
But it wasn't long before the soul-searching started anew. And people in movies and in life started to wonder how to rise to the top and stay human in films like The Best of Everything from 1959.
You work for Miss Sparrow today. Greg Adams, a regular girl, is out sick.
With Joan Crawford as a woman possessed.
I told Mr. Shalimar that you were not qualified, Miss Bender. You're too soft. I don't think you could stand up to a writer and say your work is no good. I don't think you have the guts.
Thank you for your confidence.
But of course, you were never quite sure what those people actually did. It was a generic kind of work, which amazingly dominated the film while still remaining in the background. In the foreground was the romance.
The best of
And we heard a little bit about work in the 60s, but as satire.
I just want to say one word to you.
And only, again, in the background of the real story.
Plastics.
It never got in the way. It never was a problem. I think where that changed was probably Working Girl in 9 to 5, where suddenly work was the issue and fighting back at work was the issue. I mean, this was all an 80s thing, the Wall Street movies, the idea that what you did was what you were.
I am your employee, and as such, I expect to be treated equally, with a little dignity and a little respect.
It's about how we parcel out power, who we let in, and how we manage our jobs.
There are popular films that have sweetly captured the real stuff of work. Only a few. Broadcast news is one, I guess, which gets at the attraction some specific types of people have for work of a certain kind.
Yeah. Speak to you later. Okay, Bobby, go back to 945-46. A sound bite in the alley. It starts. So why were you in Angola?
We could go all...
Please, Bobby, we're pushing.
And even an old classic like The Red Shoes, which shows us people who live and die for their work.
I want to create, to make something big out of something little. To make a great dancer out of you.
But the one thing all of them have in common, from Charlie in the factory to Benjamin Braddock in the swimming pool and beyond, is the quest for the dream job on the dream schedule. The current American dream, our professor tells us.
30 hours a week with 6 weeks off every year at an extraordinary fee and doing something you absolutely love and are recognized as being successful at it. It's not a possible American reality.
The fact is, all of us, the burger-flipping clerks and the Prada-toting fashionistas and everyone in between, we're all looking for the right balance. And maybe even for a partner who agrees with us on what the right balance might be. And reaching that point, the perfect balance, well, that is as boring on film as it is in life. Which reminds me, gotta go, got another recording session back-to-back with this one, then I'm off to the airport, really sorry. For On the Media, I'm Sarah Fischko.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Tony Field, Jamie York, Mike Volo, and Mark Phillips, and edited by Brooke. Dylan Keefe is our technical director and Jennifer Munson our engineer, with extra engineering help from Ed Haber. We had more help from Noah Kuman. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer and John Keefe our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by Ciaobella Gelato, purveyors of all-natural gelato and sorbet. Ciaobella is available nationwide at specialty food markets. More information at ciaobellagelato.com or 1-800-GELATO-3. Support for On the Media also comes from the Bidell Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the John and Anna Maria Phillips Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.